Well, we're going to be starting something a little different. Not a little different. It's actually, we're starting something that is just like what we do all the time here, but it's a different subject matter. Let me just ask a question right off the bat. What is significant? This is an easy question, by the way. What is significant about the date September 11th, 2001? The World Trade Center was bombed. Everybody knows that, right? Was there anybody in here that did not know that? Yeah, there's nobody in here that didn't know that. We all know that. It's a very important date. How about this? How many here remember? Do you remember where you were when it happened? Yeah? Yeah? Where were you? Where were you when it happened?
On the way to Atlanta.
On the way to Atlanta. Do you remember the details of that trip? Do you remember? It was all over. So if somebody were to sit down with you and ask you to recount that day, it was 9 years ago, you could remember it pretty well, right? Because it was an important event, right? I mean, that was an important event that took place. It was profound. We could actually say that was a world-changing event. I mean, it maybe didn't change the world for everybody everywhere, but I mean, in terms of the shape of the world's larger civilizations and superpowers, everything has been changed. Everything was shaken. I mean, you think about all the changes that there were, the way we travel, the privacies that we've lost, or our sense of security, the whole world economy has been impacted by the events that happened on that day. To some degree or another, the events of that day changed things profoundly. Changed the world that we live in a profound way. I mean, governmental policies changed, wars ignited, multitudes have lost their lives or their way of life because of the events of that day. And since that day, there have been countless books and articles and documentaries and movies made about that to investigate what happened, why it happened, what the ramifications have been because it happened, the results of that. Partly because it's important for us to try to sort through and understand it. Partly because we want this to be remembered by future generations who can learn from it. Partly because we're still experiencing the effects of what happened on that day. It was profound. It shook the world. It changed everything. When something like that happens, it was 9 years ago, but I can talk to somebody, I could talk to anyone in this room, and 9 years ago, you'll remember it crystal clear in detail, the things that happened that day, because we feel the need to record and remember something like that. We feel the weight of its importance, and we also sense that need, that obligation to record that thing, to make sure that it's remembered, because people under the age of 9 didn't live through it. And yet their whole world is shaped by it. The world they were born into was shaped by that event. It's important for us to remember it. So a book or a documentary which recounts those events or investigates the ramifications of that day, well, those would be important works. I mean, wouldn't you think? I mean, that seems reasonable that those are important things. There was another event which occurred about 2,000 years ago. It was an event that took place over the span of 33 years, and I would say that its impact was far more reaching than even the events of 9/11. The thing that's amazing about that event is the seeming insignificance of it when it happened at the time, the incredibly understated way in which it occurred in this world. And yet it's something that shaped the very world that we live in now. The world prior to that event, as best as we can put together, was a completely different world than the world we live in today. That event changed the standard for world leaders and governments, how we determine what a good world leader looks like. It revolutionized the human race's understanding of the importance of equality and freedom, of human dignity and human rights. It foundationally altered our perception of those things. It's the direct root of all modern charities and relief organizations. All hospitals and rehabilitation and recovery groups have their origins in that event. The emphasis to educate our children and the advancement of the arts and literature and music are all directly related to that event. As well as the advancement of civil liberties, we can find all of that with its roots in that event that occurred way back then, some 2,000 years ago. Now, to be fair, a lot of wars, a lot of horrible things have happened that have had that have occurred that have their origins in this event as well. Things that have shaped the world in a very undesirable way. But whether it's the intended application or the twisted use of it and abuse of it, one thing is constant, and that is this event is the ground zero for everything that has changed this world drastically and dramatically. The world that we were born into was affected directly by an event that occurred 2,000 years ago. What's this event we're talking about? Well, it's incredible. It strains the edges of what we could consider believable when we really stop to think about it. It's unthinkable in a lot of ways. But the news that came to us from about 2,000 years ago is that God appeared to the human race like one of us. He lived among us. He taught among us. He did miracles. He was killed and he rose again all among us. And it changed everything. It changed everything. And that's what we're going to start a study on Sunday mornings here at Eastgate. We're going to begin an exploration of the Gospel of Luke, which is exciting to me, but I'll admit right off the bat that this is a pretty big undertaking, and it's something that the church marketing gurus always say is a really bad idea, that you should never do something like this on a Sunday morning, because the thinking is you need to do things that are short and compact and are subjects that relate to modern living, et cetera, et cetera. Marketing gurus have never had a whole lot of input here, so I don't know that that's going to be a big influence. But I have some really important reasons why I believe this is an important study for us, why we need to take the time to do this, however long this is going to take for us. For one thing, the church used to thrive on the story of Jesus, the teaching from the Gospels. Our whole thing as Christians, as those who are of Christ or as Christ followers, is that we're following Christ, right? I mean, that makes sense. And to do that, we need to really know about him, who he is and what it is that he taught and what he did. And we're going to find that. We're going to find that information in the Gospels. We're going to find that in the story of Jesus, not necessarily in just peripheral studies. Now, the teachings of the epistles are important, the teaching letters of the New Testament, and we're careful to go through those. We've been going through those for quite a while, looking at the writings of Paul and on, and we do study those, but this, the story of Jesus, who is the Christ, that is the hero king, this is paramount to our understanding of what it is to be a Christ follower, what it means, what he was like, so that we know what we'll be like as we live out his ministry, we fulfill it in our lives. But there's something else. The coming of Christ into this world is an event that changed this world forever, as I stated earlier. I mean, it changed everything. It shaped the world that we presently live in terms of its values, in terms of the way this world governs. So much of our understanding comes from this, and yet so few know anything about it. I mean, really, it's a remarkable thing. It would be like somebody not knowing anything about the events of 9/11, which have shaped the world that we live in now, saying, well, you know what, I really don't care about that stuff because it doesn't interest me. And yet we live in the ramifications of that event. We live in a world that is shaped by what happened 2,000 years ago when Jesus came into the world, and yet so few know anything about it. Christianity has become so caricatured in our society that people under the age of 30 automatically associate Christianity with intolerance and narrow-minded bigotry. And unfortunately, the highest profile representations of Christianity have done nothing but reinforce that stereotype, have played right into that and demonstrated to those who have seen it that way that their assumptions were true. People will dismiss the claims of Christ without really knowing anything about what Jesus taught or what he did. Who was this Jesus? What did he say? It must have been amazing to have the kind of impact that it had. So that makes it profoundly important for us who consider ourselves his followers it makes it profoundly important for us to know what it is that he said, to know what this story's about, to see this for ourselves. So that being said, let's get a little bit of background on the Gospel of Luke. This gospel is one of the three synoptic gospels. That means that it is telling the whole story from a common view. It's a synopsis of what happened in Jesus' life. Now, John, there's four gospels. John, the Gospel of John, is not considered a synoptic gospel because it doesn't cover the story as an overview. It contains a very, very narrow, limited scope of the story, and it contains a lot of different stories and teachings that the other gospels don't contain. Luke is the longest of the four gospels. It has 1,151 verses. I counted them all. No, I didn't. But 1,151 verses compared to Matthew's 1,071 verses. It took me 2 years to get through Matthew, but don't get scared by that because this might be a little different. But and while it has much of the same material as Matthew and Mark, we can see the same resources were used for all three of those. This also has some stories that those Gospels don't have. In Luke, we have a much more detailed account of Christ's birth and all of the events that led up into that, including characters that weren't covered in the other Gospels. We have a whole section of parables that are unique to Luke's Gospel that you're not going to find in the other Gospels as well as characters that get highlighted that we don't find in a protracted account of the resurrection. So it's really interesting. There's a lot of different things in here. A lot of detail is provided for us. The main themes that emerge from Luke's gospel is the portrayal of Jesus as the hero king to the marginalized. He's the hero to those who are outcast. Over and over again, we're going to see Jesus reaching out to those that society and mainstream religion have written off. People that said, you know, that you can't be a part of this. And we're going to find an overarching message that tells us that the gospel is for everyone. No matter where you come from, no matter what's going on, no matter who you are, this gospel is for you. Much like this Bud's for you, but much better than that. Another theme that's going to come through as we read this is the fact that Jesus' appearance on this earth was the fulfillment of God's plan that he's had in place all through history. That this is actually not something new, but the fulfillment of something that's already been set in order. It's the fulfillment of a divine promise made from the beginning of time. Luke finds a great deal of interest in that, in making sure that we get that connection there. There's a sense of history, even though it's a contemporary for his time period, a contemporary work. There's a very strong sense of history that comes through in this as he connects it to what has gone before it, so that we see that this wasn't some upstart, some sort of flash in the pan thing that occurred, but this is the result of something that's been ongoing through the ages. God's plan that set in motion, a domino that got tipped over in the Garden of Eden, that runs through the course of history and finds its completion here in the story of Jesus. Also, Luke's gospel contains something called the journey section. It's a long, detailed account of Jesus's journey that he makes from the northern countries down to Jerusalem, where ultimately he'll meet his death, where he'll be killed on a cross. And it's referred to as the journey to the cross. It's unique to Luke's account. But in that account, we're going to see that it's the very same journey that Jesus calls us, his followers, to be on in a figurative sense. We'll find Jesus saying, this that I'm experiencing here is something you'll be experiencing as well. Not necessarily in a literal sense, but in that figurative sense of how we're going to live our lives in this world. And so through Luke's gospel, we get a very keen sense that the gospel is supposed to be mirrored in our lives, in our experience. Not in a literal sense, but in that figurative way in which Christ's death is experienced not only through us in the power that's revealed in that, but in the way that we approach the world, in the way that we approach our own understanding of self and of God and the world that we live in. And we'll unpack that as we go along. Now, we would assume that the author of this book is Luke because, well, it's called the Gospel of Luke. But the text actually never tells us that. Isn't that interesting? Both Luke and Acts were written anonymously, and it wasn't until 100 years later that Christian writers called this Luke's gospel. Now, that doesn't mean that we dismiss his authorship right off the bat or out of hand, because to me, there's some weight to the idea that antiquity represents Luke as the author. There's, you know, these are people that ascribe this to his authorship who are much closer to the event than we are. So to me, it seems reasonable enough to assume that there was some knowledge behind this, why this was attributed to him. The author is the same author as the book of Acts. The writing style is the same. And many believe that Luke and Acts, which is the story of the early church, were meant to go as one complete work. It was supposed to be one big volume that explained not only what happened with Jesus, but how the church was formed. Now, if Luke is the author, it's assumed that it would be the same Luke who was a traveling companion of Paul, the apostle. We've been reading his letters all along here. He was one of the early missionaries who went out planting churches all over the known world at that time. He's referred to in three different passages in the New Testament, in Colossians 4, in 2 Timothy 4, and in Philippians verse 24. We're not going to go look at those, but those are the sections where he's mentioned as a traveling companion with Paul. And many have assumed that if Luke is the author and he's the author of Acts, then he's not brought up in the book of Acts because he's the author. He's not writing himself in the story. He's the observer. He's the one documenting it. So if it's that Luke, then we know about him from those other scriptures that he was a physician. He was a doctor. And that's all we know about him. That's actually the sum of everything we know about Luke. He was a doctor. Was he a good doctor? I have no idea. Did he practice medicine, or was he like a doctor, like in the sense of somebody who has a doctorate in some other kind of thing? No idea. There's no possible way to know. We don't know if he was Jewish or a Gentile. We only know from his writing style that he's a very well-educated man, and he was a Hellenistic individual. Hellenistic means that he was well-versed in what was culturally current for the Greek and the Roman culture at that time. So in other words, he's somebody who, you know, wasn't isolated within just the realm of Judaism. He was somebody who was well-versed in what was happening in the culture that was all around him, that he was steeped in. Now, we don't know where or when this gospel was written. Paul quotes from it in 1 Timothy 5:18, refers to it as scripture, which means a spiritual document or something along those lines, a sacred writing. So we know that in some form it was written, it had some written form as early as the mid-60s. Most scholars put it anywhere from from the 50s to the 90s, you know, between bebop and the grunge movement, somewhere in there. So I personally tend to not go with the later date. To me, the 1 Timothy quotation of it is ample evidence to me that it finds its origins earlier than that. All right, enough of my introduction. Let's actually begin reading this thing. And today we're just going to cover the prelude or the introduction, the first four verses. If you've got a Bible, you want to open to Luke chapter 1, please. Now, this gospel is going to open with one long, formal run-on sentence. But even though it's a run-on sentence to us in the English, in the Greek in which it was written, we'd actually see how elegant and how educated this writer is. So if you're there, we're going to start with verse 1. Also, real quick, I want to mention that I'm switching over to using the ESV, the English Standard Version. If you've been following along in the New King James, which is what we've been using up until this point, I hope this isn't problematic. You should be able to track pretty well with this. The ESV is a fairly new translation. It's being touted by a lot of evangelicals as having the same kind of accuracy as the NASB, but the readability of the NIV. If all of those things mean nothing to you, then don't worry about it, but we're just going to have it up on the screen. And hopefully, if you've got a different translation, you should be able to track with it either way. Starting in verse 1. He says, "Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile a narrative of the things that have been accomplished among us, just as those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word have delivered them to us, it seemed good to me also, having followed all things closely for some time past, to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, that you may have certainty concerning the things that you've been taught." Okay, that's where we'll stop for today. Now, this opening sentence is is the prelude to the story that's going to follow. He's using the formula of classical Greek literature at the time. In fact, it's actually the exact same formula that Lucian explained in his How to Write a History, an ancient document that comes to us from the Roman era. It follows that formula exactly as to how this is presented. Josephus used this as well. So we see that the author of Luke, and we'll call him Luke. Luke is trying to elevate this work, to put it among the histories, the things that were considered to be important works in his day and age. And this is an explanation of why this story is being written, why he's doing it. Luke makes it clear that he's aware of other writings in circulation. In fact, he says many had written narratives. And that right away reveals to us the importance of this story right off the bat. You may not put that together right off, you know, just on the surface reading of it. But we have to remember that this was written down way, way before the Gutenberg printing press. This is done way before that time. This was actually done before it was, you could easily access writing materials. It wasn't that easy to get a hold of things to actually record or write things down. So the fact that many people undertook the task of writing this down instead of relying on the common form of verbal history reveals to us just how earth-shaking this event was to the people who were closest to it in history. You see that, don't you? That this was an important thing that had transpired here. It was an event that everybody recognized, felt that same weight of importance about it, that they knew it needed to be recorded somewhere or another. Where are all these other recordings? Well, we don't know. And we have to assume that God has preserved for us what it is that he wanted us to have. He doesn't speak disparagingly about any of these others. But he's just taking his turn in this. Not only that, but Luke describes what he's about to share as those things that have been fulfilled, showing that this was important because it was a significant aspect of what God is doing in the earth today. So it's not just a history. We're not looking at this purely from a historical point of view. There's something else to this. There are spiritual ramifications to this. There is something in this that reveals to us the nature of God, God's purpose and plan in the earth, what's been going on in terms of that. So we see he's writing this because it's important. The other reason that he's writing this is that the message of Jesus has spread far and wide, way beyond its original context in which it happened. So he's writing this down so that the facts can be kept straight. We know that Peter and Paul and Timothy and others had taken the message all over Asia Minor and to Greece and to Rome. And it's very possible that there were garbled and misleading reports that were circulating concerning just who exactly Jesus was, what it is that he said, what it is that he did, what exactly had happened to him. It's very possible that in the process of transmitting that, things got mixed up or messed up. So while others were writing this down, he wants to make his contribution. I'm going to write my version of this. I'm going to write what I know concerning this thing. And he's got a wider audience in mind. We can tell from the outset, from this very opening sentence, that he's looking to write to an educated, intelligent, and inquiring public who want to know just what it is that happened over there in Palestine, what took place over there. And I'll tell you what, for us as 21st century Americans who want to follow Christ, Luke is the perfect author for us. He really is, because he's writing to the uninitiated, those who haven't been involved in the whole Jewish scene. So they're people that don't really readily get all the background information. He's speaking to those who aren't familiar with the locals, and he's getting down the facts of his own investigation. He himself, obviously steeped in Hellenism, has gone in there and he's investigated, and now he's transmitting. He's part of this second transmission to let us know what it is that he learned. And don't get me wrong, he's not writing objectively or dispassionately. He's not just trying to be an objective journalist. He's writing for the purpose of persuasion. He clearly is trying to convince the people about this story, and he's doing it the way any documentary filmmaker would make it. No documentary is ever made that's objective. Everybody has a point of view that they're trying to push through. And so this is what he's doing, and he's doing it the way they would do it. He's gone to the place where Jesus was. He's interviewed the people involved in the stories. He's seen the people who were healed, found out what they had to say about it. He's talked to their friends and their family, and he's writing it down, he says, to provide certainty about these claims. And that word kind of hits you like a bomb, doesn't it? Certainty. That is a bold, bold statement to make about something, to provide you with assurance and to have the certainty when it comes to this story about who Jesus is. That's a bold claim. But again, we can see that there's basis for him making these claims, especially being as close to the situation as he was. He wants to encourage those who've believed but who haven't seen for themselves. People like you and I. Like even the one that he's addressing this account to, he calls him Most Excellent Theophilus. Some have assumed that this Theophilus dude was like a Roman patron, a wealthy Roman who was funding this investigation, somebody who maybe was a convert who wanted to know more. Others have postulated that he was actually a Roman governor who had become converted to Christianity. And so in defense of Christianity and the growing face of persecution, he was writing this down. But there's another thought about Theophilus too, and it's one that I really like a lot, that I think is kind of cool. And that is that Theophilus is us, is you and I. Because the word Theophilus literally means lover of God. So this could have been a literary device. This could have been him addressing those who love to know about God. Maybe it's converts in the early stages of Christianity who are eager to learn more about this Jesus that they're now following. I want to know who this guy is. I want to know what it is that he said. And if that's the case, then Theophilus certainly is us. People far removed from the original context of the thing who need someone to transmit the information to us. And that's certainly the mindset that we come to this gospel with. We love to know what God has done, what God is doing. We're interested in God's stuff, which is why we're here, which is why we're looking at this, which certainly makes us good candidates to be the Theophilus he was writing to. So it's good to get these certified facts in order and look at them and read them. Now, N.T. Wright suggests one more reason for writing this down, this account down. And it's a reason that makes a lot of sense, but it's not one that's necessarily explicit in the text there. But he believes that Luke took the pains to write this down for the sake of future generations, for the sake of those who were coming on the scene later. And you know, it makes me think about how starting in the early 1990s, the National Historical Agencies began a furious campaign of getting with World War II vets. I don't know if you were familiar with what was going on, but they began trying to contact as many World War II vets as they possibly could and get them recording their stories, either, you know, via a tape recording or writing their stories down. Can you imagine why? You can figure out why, right? Before they disappear forever. It suddenly dawned on everybody that these guys had been very close-lipped about their experiences over there. And if they didn't get those things recorded soon, within the next 10 years or so, that whole generation was going to be gone. And the first-hand experiences would have been lost to us forever. We'd have had a few historical accounts, but not those first-hand experiences, which carry a lot more weight, which helps us to understand, get a fuller, deeper picture of what really happened there. If Luke is writing this in the mid-60s, there's a terrible war. And I don't mean 1960s, that would have been Vietnam. But in the 60s, in 60 AD, there was a terrible war that was raging across Palestine. The Jewish people had tried to revolt against the Roman Empire, and the revolt wasn't working well at all. In fact, it had disastrous results. So not only was the older generation reaching an age where they were going to start passing away, the generation who had witnessed the events of Jesus' life, not only were they passing away, but the towns and the villages where Jesus had done this ministry were being dispersed. They were being destroyed. The stories that were being transmitted verbally required a peaceful, stable society in order to keep those stories succinct and together. And that was disappearing in Palestine. So unless this story was written down, unless somebody went in there and recorded those events from the eyewitnesses themselves, it could have been lost to future generations. That's why Luke more than likely felt the impetus to do this. Because Luke, like the early Christians, believed that these things had actually happened. we're so far removed from it, it's real easy for us to say, ah, well, you know, we don't know. It probably didn't. It could have been this. It could have been that. It could have come from anywhere else. But the people who were directly affected by this, the people in the region, the people who were affected by it as it moved out in concentric circles like away from a blast, well, for them, it was real. For them, they knew it was real. These were historical facts, and these facts were events that changed the course of the world. So they saw that it was vital that they record these things and these things be represented as clearly and as orderly and as accessibly as possible, so that people like you and I, 2,000 years removed from it, from a completely different culture, would be able to read it, access it, be able to see how it continues to impact lives to this very day. So that's what Luke gives us. He gives us an account of this event that happened on this planet, this event that changed everything. Luke, in his opening sentence here, has thrown open a door and invited us in to come in with him and explore this story to see who this Jesus is. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to explore this gospel so that we, like Theophilus, can be reassured about who Jesus is, what Jesus has said, what he's done. For one thing, because there are a lot of misrepresentations about who Jesus is and what he's done and what his emphasized, what was important to him. Because Christianity, I believe, beyond a shadow of a doubt, has been hijacked in our modern world by politicians and by people with agendas that have nothing to do with what Jesus had to say. You've got people hating people and doing it in the name of Christ, who came as the Prince of Peace and the foundation of a gospel of love that should have changed this world. It's so important for us to know what it is that Jesus said, what it is that he's all about. And not only that, but the pressures of this life that move in on us, those things that want to swallow us and bury us alive under all of that, man, if we come back to this confidence that God has a plan in all of these things, we saw that it moved towards, was culminated and fulfilled in who Jesus is, that he's got a plan and a purpose, and that plan includes us, man, we can face just about anything. We can take it. No matter what this world wants to dish out, we know there's something bigger unfolding here than just the events right in front of our eyes. As I said, this won't be quick. So we got to realize we're in for the long haul. This is going to take some time, but I assure you that it will be worth it. As we look at Christ, as we look at the one who we're following, we may take a slightly different approach from time to time, which may expedite this a little bit. But we'll certainly do our best to keep it as interesting as we can, applicable as we can. So anybody should be able to join us as we're doing this at any time, at any point in this study. So that's what we're going to do. Does that sound like a plan? All right, very cool. If you guys will stand with me, please. And if Riley and the band wants to come on back up here. God, we thank you so much for the work that you're doing in our lives and how it is the continuation of the amazing thing that Jesus did in coming to this planet. We know, Father, those of us who followed you and have believed on you, we know our lives have been changed in amazing ways. And that's just a microcosm of the amazing things that you've done on this planet. You know us, Lord. You know our tendency. Our tendency is to focus on everything that's bad and miss all the good that you're doing. So, Lord, as we're studying this, as we're looking at this, as we're looking at you in reading this word, I just pray that you open our eyes to see how the kingdom of God is advancing in this world to this very day. I pray this for us, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen. I'm going to close with a song here. Ruth and Blake will be over here, and I'll be down here to pray with anybody who needs prayer. But God bless you guys.
The Lord reigns. Let the earth rejoice.
Let the earth
rejoice. The Lord reigns.
The Lord reigns.
Let the earth rejoice.
Let the earth rejoice.
Righteousness and truth are the foundations of your throne. Righteousness and truth. The foundations of your throne. In your presence, Lord, the mountains melt like wax. In your presence, Lord, the mountains melt like wax. In your presence, Lord, bow before your throne. In your presence, Lord, I bow before your throne. And I lift my hands and worship you, O Lord. I lift my hands and worship you, O Lord, for you are the Lord, most high above the earth. For you are the Lord, most high above the earth. The Lord reigns. The Lord reigns. Let the earth rejoice.
Let the earth rejoice.
The Lord reigns.
The Lord reigns.
Let the earth rejoice.
Let the earth rejoice.
Righteousness and truth are the foundations of your throne. Righteousness and truth, the foundations of your throne. The Lord reigns. The Lord reigns. The Lord reigns.
Well, he does reign. We've got a new blessing for us here. So let's speak this together. We're all going to read it together. It's about trees, I think. No. May Christ be a light to illuminate and guide you. Christ be a shield to overshadow you. Christ be under you. Christ be over you. Christ beside you. On your left and on your right, both in this world and the one to come. Go in peace, you children of God.